Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true? They don't think Christianity's true. They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
I know. You don't have time to read the Bible. You're so busy. Yeah, I understand. We're all busy. We don't have time for God. We got other things to do. We don't have time to read it. Well, you know, it does take a little effort to read. You know, as much as I like to learn, I really don't like to read. It's work. Well, it's not work if you're reading fun books, I guess. A lot of the books I read aren't fun. But I'm trying to learn, and sometimes learning isn't fun. I like the end result. I don't always like the process. You know, there's a Bible app out there. It's got over 100 million downloads. It's called the YouVersion of the Bible. You can get it on your iPad, your iPhone. I assume you can get it on Android and Windows devices as well. Now, my wife and I normally listen to the scriptures. I learn pretty well by hearing more so than by reading, although I guess I can learn both ways, quite obviously, and I know you can too. But if you learn a lot by hearing and you obviously should read the Bible and try and understand it, you can listen to the Bible if you don't want to work at reading. And I've been listening, my wife and I have been listening to the book of James lately. And I came across a passage in the book of James. You know how you probably read this 100 times, you don't notice it until there's a situation going on that causes the text and the meaning behind the text to hit you in the face because there's a situation going on. And that's the case with the book of James, chapter 3, verses 13 to 18. And the reason this particular passage hit me in the face is because of what's going on in our country right now, particularly in Washington, D.C. And as I read this passage here, I want you to think about what's going on in Washington regarding the government shutdown and the big argument between the political parties here. Here's the passage in the book of James. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. I can't think of a better description of what's going on in Washington right now, and for many years, actually, then that passage right there. Let me continue. Verse 17. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere, peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. Wow, is that convicting? Of course, it's convicting not just amongst politicians, but of course among people in the church. Because quite often in the church, we create more havoc and disorder because we have selfish ambition in our hearts and we're suppressing the truth. It happens even in church, not just in Washington, but I was reading it and thinking about Washington as I was reading it. And I'm wondering if there's any Christians left in Washington. I'm wondering, well, I know there are. I know Ted Cruz is. I know there are several people up there who are Christians. But I'm wondering why we don't see more statesmen. Why don't we see more people who are out there to actually do public service, to serve the public? That's what they're there to do. They shouldn't be there to advance their careers. They should be there to serve the public for the common good. And nobody up there, or very few, I should say, I'm not going to broad brush everyone, but very few up there appear to be involved in service. They're involved in selfish ambition, which, as James says, when people are involved in selfish ambition, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. Now, this was brought into the forefront this past week with the ludicrous closing of the World War II Memorial, before which there were several World War II veterans, men in their 80s and 90s, and this open-air memorial was being closed by the Obama administration. It takes more effort to close it than to leave it open. You don't have to open it. It's in a field. It's in the mall. There's no fence around it. It's just there. So you walk from the Lincoln Memorial, you head toward the Capitol, you pass the reflecting pool. At the end of the reflecting pool, it's just there. It's like the Vietnam Memorial, which is, if you're going from the Lincoln Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial is to the left of the reflecting pool. And at the end of the reflecting pool, just before you get to the Washington Monument, there is the World War II Memorial. In order to close it, you got to put barricades around it. It's just always open. It's 24/7. How does anybody justify, in the name of public service, putting a fence around an open air memorial that's open 24/7? Mark Stein, who's not even an American, he was born in Canada, has an article. It's on National Review. It's also in the Ocean County Register. And it takes somebody like a Canadian to see the nonsense that many of people here in our country are involved in. The title of this is Manning the Barricades of Punitive Liberalism. Barry, of course, is a reference to President Barack Obama. And let me just mention a few things Stein says here in this particular editorial. He says, this week's shutdown of government suffers from the awkward fact that the overwhelming majority of the government is not shut down at all. Indeed, much of it cannot be shut down, which is the real problem facing America. Mandatory spending, Social Security, Medicare, etc., is authorized in perpetuity, or at any rate, until total societal collapse. If you throw in the interest payments on the debt, that means two-thirds of the federal budget is beyond the control of Congress's so-called federal budget process. That's why you're reading government shutdown stories about the panda cam at the Washington Zoo and the first lady ghost tweeters being furloughed. Yeah, apparently Michelle Obama has people on staff who just tweet for her. Well, now they've been laid off. I guess there's nobody there to tweet. How are we going to survive if Michelle Obama isn't tweeting? Anyway, Mark Stein goes on to say, nevertheless, just because it's a phony crisis doesn't mean it can't be made even phonier. The perfect symbol of the shutdown so far has been the World War II Memorial. This is an open-air facility on the National Mall. That's to say, an area of grass with a monument at the center. By comparison with, say, the IRS, the National Park Service is not usually one of the more controversial government agencies. But come shutdown, they're reborn as the shock troops of punitive bureaucracy. Thus, they decided to close down an unfenced open-air site, which oddly enough requires more personnel to shut than it would to keep it open. Is this madness or what? Is this public service or selfish ambition, as James would say? All I can say, if a Republican did this, he'd be facing impeachment right now. That's why, more than ever, you need the American Family Association to give you the truth about the news, friends. We're going to revisit this, and we're not going to spend the whole show on this, maybe another segment, and then get to your questions a little bit later. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. I just have to get this off my chest, ladies and gentlemen. This is madness. I'm Frank Turek, back in 2 minutes.
I find that most everywhere I go, people have not ever faced a biblical overview of God's presence.
Richard Owen Roberts, president and founding director of International Awakening Ministries, and for decades, a student of revival.
I believe that a fresh look at the subject of God's presence is highly urgent today.
Behold Your God, in partnership with International Awakening Ministries, presents the Irresistible Cry Conference on Revival, a gathering designed for anyone who longs for the manifest presence of God in the church. Among the speakers are Richard Owen Roberts, John Snyder, and Paul Washer, all seen on the Behold Your God study. Join us for the Irresistible Cry Conference on Revival at the Billy Graham Center in Wheaton, Illinois on October 21st and 22nd. To register or for more information, visit internationalawakening.org.
Steve Russo with Real Answers.
Have you ever met someone who doesn't want to be happy? In all my travels, I never have. A teacher of a young adult class asked the students to write their answers to the question, "What do you want most out of life?" 9 out of 10 answered, "Happiness." Psychology Today magazine took a poll of 40,000 readers, asking them what questions they had about life. 83% responded that their main question was, "How can I find happiness?" It's really no secret. The answer is plain and simple, and it's found in the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon wrote, "To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness." Happiness is a result of our obedience to the living God. True enjoyment in life comes only as we follow God's guidelines for living. Without Him, satisfaction in life is an endless search.
For information on books and other resources by Steve Russo, visit the Real Answers website, realanswers.com.
Selfish ambition going on in Washington. Read the book of James, particularly chapter 3. And I think when you read that, you're going to go, wow, this is crazy what's going on in Washington right now. Anyway, I'm reading a section of a column by Mark Stein. It was in the Ocean County Register yesterday, also on a National Review online. And we're talking about this phony government shutdown, which really isn't a shutdown at all, except to shut down things that are always open anyway and shouldn't be shut down, like the World War II Memorial. I'm continuing in Mark Stein's column right now. He says, so the Park Service dispatched their own vast army to the World War II Memorial to ring it with barricades and yellow police line, do not cross tape, strung out like the world's longest "We support our troops" ribbon. For good measure, they issued a warning that anybody crossing the yellow line would be liable to arrest, or presumably in extreme circumstances, what happened to that lady who was killed tragically in Washington, the mentally deranged woman from Connecticut. And Stein writes, in a heartening sign that the American spirit is not entirely dead, at least among a small percentage of these veterans, he says, a visiting party of veterans, these are World War II veterans, pushed through the barricades and went to honor their fallen comrades, noting for reporters that after all, when they'd showed up at the beach at Normandy, it too had not been officially open. One would not be altogether surprised to find the feds stringing yellow police tape along the Rio Grande, the 49th parallel, and the Pacific and Atlantic coasts, if only to keep Americans in rather than anybody else out. Still, I would like to have been privy to the high-level discussions at which the government took the decision to install its barricades on open parkland. For anyone with a modicum of self-respect, it's difficult to imagine how even the twerpiest of twerp bureaucrats would consent to stand at a crowd barrier and tell a group of elderly soldiers who've flown in from across the country that they're forbidden to walk across a piece of grass and pay their respects. Yet if any National Park Service employee retained enough sense of their own humanity to balk at these instructions or other spiteful, petty closures of semi-wilderness fishing holes and the like, we've yet to hear about it. Again, I'm reading from Mark Stein's column of yesterday. He goes on to say, and this is the real kicker, the World War II Memorial exists thanks to some $200 million in, wait for it, private donations, plus $15 million or so from Washington. In other words, the feds paid for the grass. That's it. But the thug usurpers of the bureaucracy want to send a message. In today's America, everything is the gift of government and exists only at the government's pleasure. Whether it's your health insurance, your religious liberty, or the monument to your fallen comrades. The barricades are such a perfect embodiment of what James Pearson calls punitive liberalism. They should be tied around Obama's neck forever in the same way ketchup is a vegetable got hung around Reagan-era Republicans. Alas, the court eunuchs of the Obama media cannot rouse themselves even on behalf of the nation's elderly warriors. End quote from Mark Stein. Yeah, the media is actually involved in a cover-up, I would say, the major media. Anything the president does, anything a liberal does is great. And if it's bad, we're not going to say a word about it. If a conservative did this, articles of impeachment would be in place already. This is incredible. The feds even tried to close Mount Vernon, not realizing that Mount Vernon is privately owned. Washington's original house is privately owned. They tried to close it, but they can't. I think there might be a road leading to Mount Vernon that, of course, is a public road the feds paid for or whatever. But the house itself is owned by a private person or a private organization. It's not owned by the feds, and yet they're trying to close it. It takes more people to close something than it does to leave it open anyway. Now, all this occurs in the context of a comment made by a senior administration official the other day who said this: "We are winning." I'm quoting now. "We are winning. It doesn't really matter to us how long the shutdown lasts because what matters is the end result." Does that sound like public service, or does that sound like public selfish ambition? Seems to me it sounds like selfish ambition, which is why the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, said, "What? This isn't a game. We are winning. Not a game. This is supposed to be service. We're supposed to be serving the people." Now, I'll be the first to tell you, I'm not a fan of virtually anyone up on the Hill right now. There's a few that I like, obviously, and I'm sure you do too, but this is just incredibly selfish, incredibly petty, and incredibly insulting to the elderly gentlemen and heroes that saved this country from Nazism. To score political points, the president and his administration tries to close something that's always open and is vastly privately funded anyway. Insulting these men who came from all over the country, men in their 80s and 90s, and I'm sure this trip had been planned for months. You don't just get these gentlemen to all show up on a moment's notice. This is the antithesis of service. This is selfish ambition and pettiness to try and close something like this. And I'm reminded of something that John Adams said. He said, "Because power corrupts, society's demands for moral authority and character increase as the importance of the position increases." As Lord Acton said, "Absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely." So Adams is piggybacking off that and saying, that's why if we have people high up The higher the position, the higher the character necessary. And I'm not seeing a lot of character from many people in Washington from the president on down. This is pettiness. Of course, I'd like to get your insights in on this, and then we can talk about other issues. We can talk about any issues related to this or any issues related to Christianity you want. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Let me go to John in Florida. John, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir. John, can you hear me?
Yes.
You're on.
Hi, Frank.
How you doing, sir?
All right. I was going to say what you said about the Senate and Congress being responsible for this. Because they act like they're Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell. McConnell looks like he's about half, his eyes are rolling back in his head. Looks like he's suffering from dementia or something.
And Harry, well, I don't know about that, John, but what's your point?
Well, they just don't seem to get it.
Well, no, they do seem to get it. And the problem is it seems like everyone's up there out for their own political benefit, and they're just trying to score political points, when in fact what they ought to be doing is serving the country, what's in the best interest of the country. And very few appear to be willing to do that. But thanks for your call. Let me move on to Bill in Texas. Bill, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
This is Bill.
Go ahead, Bill. You're on.
Okay. Well, I just can't get over the fact that this atrocity was committed by a man who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. And these old gentlemen are from the state of Mississippi, which is, in their day, were Democrats and probably still are lifelong Democrats. Bless their heart, serve this country. They hit the beaches. They endured great pain and great strife in the war, and I cannot believe that the man thinks he's gaining public approval by doing this. He doesn't care. I told Brian Fisher 2 years ago he was a Muslim, and he didn't believe it, but I think he's beginning to come around now.
Well, Bill, I wouldn't say President Obama is a Muslim because he's too far left on so many issues, but he quite frequently does seem to sympathize with the Arab world. Of course, he was brought up partially in Indonesia, so that may be just part of his upbringing. But I'm not so concerned about what he believes in his heart, other than his own salvation, quite obviously. I'm more concerned about what he's doing, and what he's doing is in my view, just insulting and petty to these World War II veterans. And one of the reasons he's not afraid to do it is because the media is not going to call him on it. You need people like folks here at the American Family Association who are going to point that out. But the major media will not, and that's the problem. Thanks for your call, Bill. Let me move on to another Bill in West Virginia. Bill, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead. Bill, you there?
It struck me recently, listening to the news about this, that the World War II veterans fought against a regime which considered blacks, among others, an inferior race. The Nazis published this. It was well known. They also included Poles and Slavs. They had a laundry list of nations that they believed were inferior. The Nazis said in writing that these were races that were on a lower level of evolution, quote unquote. And so the veterans were fighting against a regime that would have liked to have gotten rid of all the blacks. Once they got rid of the Jews, if they had remained in power and conquered the Western world, the blacks would have been next. They would have been, next on down the list. And, of course, they couldn't get their hands on them because they were killing the ones that were in close proximity to Germany. They were killing Poles and other ethnic groups. But
all right, thanks, Bill. We're coming up to a station break. You're absolutely right, and that is actually out of the playbook of Charles Darwin because, of course, Hitler believed in macroevolution. I'm Frank Turek. Back in 2 minutes. Don't touch that dial.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
Catastrophe, the judgment of the flood. This is Ken Ham, heading up the ministry building a full-size Noah's Ark near Cincinnati. In our seven seas of history display at the Creation Museum, the third C stands for catastrophe. What are we referring to there? Well, the global flood of Noah's day. As Adam's descendants married and had children, they became more and more wicked. So God judged their sin by sending a global flood that destroyed all men and creatures on the earth. But God saved Noah and his family on the ark, along with representatives of all the land animals. Today we find evidence of the flood in the rock layers around the world. Billions of creatures were fossilized as the floodwaters laid down the rock layers. You know, the flood reminds us that God doesn't tolerate sin, and the ark reminds us that he has provided a way of salvation.
You'll learn the good news of the gospel when you visit our Bible upholding website, answersingenesis.org. You'll be encouraged at answersingenesis.org.
Welcome back to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network. If you think our last caller was wrong regarding Hitler, he's not. Hitler was a believer in natural selection and Darwin's theory of natural selection. In fact, it was the basis of his quest to create the Aryan superiority or create the super race. Because in 1924, Hitler wrote a book called Mein Kampf, and I'm quoting from it now. If nature does not wish that weaker individuals should mate with the stronger, she wishes even less that a superior race should intermingle with an inferior one. Because in such cases, all her efforts through hundreds of thousands of years to establish an evolutionary higher stage of being may thus be rendered futile. But such a preservation goes hand in hand with the inexorable law that it is the strongest and the best who must triumph, and they have the right to endure. He who would live must fight. He who does not wish to fight in this world, where permanent struggle is the law of life, has not the right to exist. Adolf Hitler, in his book Mein Kampf, if it's survival of the fittest, then the fittest just survive, and the Aryan race is the fittest, and so we're going to extinguish. The Aryans are. We're going to extinguish any others who refuse to fight. You're just the weaker anyway. So we're just going to weed you out as evolution does. Yes, friends, ideas have consequences. And these World War II, how do we get on Hitler? These World War II veterans who fought against Hitler are being denied access to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. This morning, apparently, they've actually put barriers around this open area, this open memorial, and they wired them together so people can't pull the barriers apart now. This takes more people to do for a government that's supposedly shut down than it would to do nothing because the barriers aren't there to begin with when the government isn't shut down. This is just outrageous, I think. Anyway, back to the phone lines. Let me go to Jim in Mississippi. Jim, you're on with Frank Turek. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I've heard you and Brian Fisher use the word petty several times. This is not petty, unless I don't understand the meaning of the word. This is provocative and antagonistic. And Obama is testing to see how far he can push. Now, what needs to happen is the American people need to go remove those barriers, because this is a test to see how far we will be pushed. And if we don't remove those barriers, I think the writing is on the wall for us.
Well, Jim, I think some folks did remove the barriers a couple of days ago. I don't know about today, obviously. I'm not in D.C. right now, but we'll see what happens with regard to that. I think it's outrageous, and maybe you're correct. Maybe provocative and antagonistic is a better word. I'm using petty in the context that what he's trying to do is get people to be annoyed at the Republicans as if they're responsible for putting barricades around the World War II Memorial, when in fact Congress has nothing to do with that. That's an executive branch function. That's the president and his administration doing that. So it's, and of course the media won't cover any of this, because the media, of course, is rooting for all, for everything liberal. So that's why you need the AFA and others who are saying this. Now, I say all this, friends, and by the way, thanks for the call, Jim. I say all this not to complain about people in Washington per se, as much as I am as to complain about us, Christians. Because if more Christians were in journalism, if more Christians were in the media, if more Christians were in positions of power in Washington, maybe none of this would be happening. And how do people get into media? How do people get into journalism? How do people get into politics? How do people get in positions of power to prevent this kind of nonsense? Well, Christians have to go do this. And for too long, Christians have been sitting on the sidelines saying, oh, we can't do that. We, you know, we just got to go out and preach the gospel. Well, yeah, you got to preach the gospel. But you also have to be members of society. And if you're not members of society, then that society can squelch your ability to preach the gospel. Because the laws that are made in Washington, the laws that are made in your state governments, the laws that are made in your local municipalities affect your ability to preach the gospel. If you don't think so, go to Saudi Arabia, go to North Korea, go to Iran. You can't preach the gospel in those countries, not legally anyway, because politically they've ruled it out. And we're getting to the point in our country, unless Christians start speaking up, we won't be able to preach the gospel or live our faith out either. We're already seeing this with regard to Obamacare and with regard to same-sex marriage. These political movements are squelching the ability of Christians and even just people of conscience from living out what they believe to be true. It's really our fault at the end of the day. All right, let me go to Karen in Virginia. Karen, you're on with Frank Turk. Go right ahead, ma'am.
Yes. My question is really kind of follows up very well about what can we do about it. I tried to contact both of my senator's offices, and, of course, they're closed for the government shutdown. I did contact my representative's office, and they are open with limited staff. And I asked advice about what to do, and the only thing that we can do is email our senators messages that they're not going to read. So my question is anybody doing anything about organizing some sort of protest in D.C.? Because if I go down there as an individual, and I thought about it, going down there as an individual and go into the Rayburn office building and go into the, Senate and trying to just find my senators and talk to them. They're down there. They're working. But the buildings are closed because of the government shutdown. So we can't reach them to say they're not winning. You know, they're claiming they're winning. And they can say that because none of the American people can get through to them.
True. And you're in Virginia. How close are you to D.C., Karen?
I'm close enough. But I feel like it's a futile effort to go by myself.
Right.
And I don't know, I'm in a puny rural town. I don't know that I could, generate enough people to make a difference.
Tomorrow in Sunday school or tomorrow in your church, you may want to talk to some folks and say, hey, why don't we go down there, at least stand with the veterans down there at the World War II Memorial and protest that. But, the change will really occur not by emailing yourself, although you always have to do that. You always have to contact people. The change is going to occur at the next election, which is about a year and a month away. That's when real change can occur. You have to keep pressure on these people in Washington, but then you have to vote and get others to vote and have maybe Christians run for positions in Virginia where you are. In fact, I think you have a governor's race coming up here, don't you? Don't you have a governor's race?
Yes.
Isn't McAuliffe running against? Who's he running against?
Cuccinelli.
Yeah. Is he the AG? Is he the Attorney General? Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've got an old-time liberal, McAuliffe, running against the conservative Cuccinelli, you say his name is?
Yes.
That's next month, I think, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you can affect your state much sooner than you can affect the federal government, because that's coming up next month. So I just think it's got to be something persistent. It's not going to be a one-time event. Yeah, they're going to be closed. And most commentators think that this is somehow going to get resolved before the debt ceiling crisis hits on the 17th of October. So within a week or two, this whole thing is going to get resolved, at least temporarily. And then I think the issue is to keep pressure on people for the next 13 months and get the right people on the ballot and make changes that way. But continue, I would say, to contact your representatives, even if they are closed. I mean, just be persistent. And maybe you can get some people at church to join forces with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. And thanks for be willing to do something so close to D.C. We need more people like Karen out there. All right, let me go on to LaDonna in Tennessee. LaDonna, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, man.
Hello.
My
comment is, Obama claims to be a Baptist. What kind of Christian would shut down the veterans? My father was a World War vet, and he's still living. Mm-hmm. But he is on VA disability. And this is a disgrace to all the vets, to all the military, and to God. And, I mean, I'm a Democrat, mm-hmm. but I may go Republican. Mm-hmm. Because he is the worst president in history, as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of people.
Well,
but
yeah, I think many people agree with you on that, LaDonna. But I try and, you know, people call themselves Republicans or Democrats, and I look at their platforms, and I'm just going to be honest. When you look at the platform of each party, I think the Republican Party lines up better with biblical values. But that doesn't mean that every Republican is a good biblical value type person, because there are many Republicans who are not. Of course, there are even some Democrats that hold to biblical values. I don't understand how they stay in the party with the platform that they have, but I know of some Democrats that hold to biblical values, but they've been brought up Democrat. They got elected maybe in a Democrat district, and so they're in the Democrat Party. But if you read the party platforms, you realize there is a stark difference. One of the problems, however, is that when these people get to Washington, they don't seem to change Washington. Washington seems to change them.
Exactly.
And we never really get anywhere positive, at least in our government, from either party, it seems. I just think that, as I look at it, the Republicans are just less worse than the Democrats generally. You know, it's like we never really get anywhere. It's just business as usual. And now these Republicans, at least ostensibly, are trying to stand for what they say is right with regard to Obamacare. And there's going to be a disaster if Obamacare gets put into place. And a lot of people are seeing this already, because the premiums they have to pay for their insurance are even more than what they're already paying. So there's the Republicans are saying, let's just delay it for a year and then see if we can fix it later. And of course, the president doesn't even want to negotiate. So the whole thing is really just a big mess. But
he's not going to negotiate.
Well,
he says
it doesn't,
it's already a law, and he don't have to do anything.
Well, yeah, but the Congress still has a constitutional responsibility to make sure that money is spent wisely. So you can pass a law, but that doesn't mean the Congress has to fund it. Hey, LaDonna, I appreciate you calling in and being open-minded and not just voting blindly with party, because a lot of people have a tendency to do that, and that's one of the reasons I think the country's getting hurt. We're not really evaluating the candidates for who they are and then voting accordingly. I'm Frank Turek. We'll be back in just 2 minutes with more of your calls, 888-589-8840.
If you're not already listening to AFR Talk Saturday nights at 10 Central, just listen to what you're missing.
At the bottom of all of this, a child is afraid. I'm saying this not so that we can, in a Freudian kind of way, diagnose people, but we can explain and say, well, that's because it wasn't done biblically. Some people would just say, you know, love is enough. It needs more than that. It needs good theology.
Don't miss Wretched Radio with Todd Friel every Saturday night at 10 Central on AFR Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. This is James Dobson. Let me invite you to tune in to our program, Family Talk. We want to provide encouragement for families with timely advice on marriage and parenting. Proverbs 24:3 says, through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. Join me for Family Talk.
Listen to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk each weekday morning at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on AFR Talk.
Few words offer more peace and comfort than this one. Secure. But security may be something you've never had much of in your life. You may have experienced conditional love and performance-based love, but not much love that's there when you're unlovable. Maybe there have been people, positions, or things that were your security blanket, but when they're gone, and with them, that sense of being safe. If you've been disappointed in relationships, hurt a lot, or if you're tired of losing what you were hanging on to, then you're ready to experience God's love. God's love is complete and secure for those that come to Him through His Son, Jesus Christ. If you want to learn how to have a relationship with Jesus and be eternally secure in God's love, then call 888-NEED-HIM. That's 888-NEED-HIM. Or chat with us at chataboutjesus.com.
Examined with Frank Turek on the AFR Talk Radio Network, our website, crossexamined.org. By the way, friends, I was going to try and get to the app today and talk about more of the quick answers that we have in there, but we've got the phone lines filled up, so I'm probably just going to stay with the phone callers here. But I want to again encourage you, if you don't have our new app, which is for iPhone, iPad, Droid devices, go to our website, crossexamined.org, click on resources. You'll see the app there. Download it. It is free. It has the podcast from this program on it. But more importantly, it also has a quick answer section. So if you're just talking with somebody and they say something against Christianity and you don't quite know how to answer it, you take out your iPhone, your iPad, you hit a button and you get an answer. Okay, so now obviously it's not exhaustive. We're going to add a lot more answers to it, but we've got a bunch of more common question and answers in this app. Let's see, we've got over 7,000 people I think have downloaded, or about 7,000 people have downloaded already over about the past 5 or so weeks. So it's being used quite a bit. It's the Cross Examined app. You can get it at our website. You can get it at the App Store. Just type in Cross Examined, two words, and use it. It's there for your use, and as I said, it's free. Now, I just pulled up the Drudge Report, and there's a headline. The headline on the Drudge Report is, Obama says Redskins owner should change name. Well, gee, that's important, isn't it? I'll tell you what. We're going to have to change the name United States if this kind of leadership continues, because the states aren't going to be united. One day, one of these states is going to say, we've had enough of this. We're seceding. How about let's be more concerned about our country than a football team name? Could we do that? Would that be, is that too much to ask? Please. Let me go to Kathy in Texas. Kathy, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. I just wanted to give your listeners a couple of bits of information.
Yes.
First of all, the reason the veterans are coming in the way they're coming in is there's a nonprofit charitable organization. I don't know the name of the organization, but they fly them in groups, mm-hmm. From different states on different days. And so when they're arriving in large groups because this organization is flying them in. And there is also currently an organization called 2 Million Bikers, which is very easy to find on Facebook. The bikers have organized, and they are meeting those flights at the airport, escorting them to the monument, and they have wire cutters with them so that they can cut and remove the barricades for them.
Well, that sounds like fun. How'd you know about that, Kathy, the 2 Million Bikers?
It's on Facebook. They also rode to Washington, D.C. on 9/11.
I remember
to honor
that.
The fallen.
Yes.
And the Washington, D.C. police changed all the webcams. There were even some webcams that showed snow on the ground on 9/11 rather than showing the bikers riding.
I'll tell you, it's just not what you think it is. I mean, there's so many smoke and mirrors going up there on up there in Washington. It is really getting scary, Kathy. Well, thanks for giving us right. the information on that. And for those of you like Karen who do live in the Washington, D.C. area, I bet if you just went down to the World War II Memorial, which for those of you just tuning in, President Obama's administration is trying to close something that's open 24/7 to begin with, that World War II memorial, while veterans who are 80 and 90 years old are trying to go there and pay their respects. Now, Kathy here is telling us that there's 2 million bikers. The organization are sending bikers in there to escort these veterans to the World War II memorial to allow them in. So if you're anywhere near there, you may want to just go down there. It might be something that would be historic to be a part of. Thank you so much, Kathy. Let me move on to Douglas, who's been waiting the longest in Oklahoma. Douglas, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
Good morning, Frank.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Sir, I agree with one of the previous callers. He stated that Obama is trying to push the American people as far as they will go. And I don't think we should totally discount all the presidential things that he enacted earlier in the year, giving him special powers if he declares martial law. And also the fact that there were the U.S. Army marched on the streets, St. Louis as well, which is against the Constitution. I think he's trying to provoke so he can get martial law and declare these inactions that he made.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the case or not. That would be quite a bold step to take. I mean, martial law you normally put into place when there's an imminent danger to society and everyone needs to be put under wraps or there has to be a curfew of some kind. I don't see why that would be necessary.
If there was any type of civil war,
mm-hmm.
do you think he'd declare martial law?
Well, perhaps, but I don't see that coming anytime soon. I pray it doesn't come. But I don't think bikers with wire cutters at the World War II Memorial would warrant some kind of martial law. But look, I'm no prophet. This you might be right. This could happen. I pray it doesn't. I'll tell you the way our country's going. You know, we're commenting and disagreeing with some of the things Obama and other politicians have been doing. But I let me reiterate, the problem is with us. The primary problem is with Christians because Christians don't get involved. Christians don't stand up. Christians are cowards. Christians are often anti-intellectual. We don't know why we believe what we believe. We don't stand for what we believe. And this is the result. And if anyone's to blame, we can go look in the mirror. We're to blame. Thanks for the call, Jimmy. Let me move on to Jimmy. Douglas. Let me move on to Jimmy in Texas. Jimmy, go ahead.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'll try to be brief. I almost don't know where to begin, but the lady called earlier and said that she couldn't reach her congressman or senator. That's incorrect. I've called 202-224-3121. That's the Capitol switchboard. You can leave a recorded message to any elected mm-hmm. official. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I know what you're talking about, the reflecting pool and where everything is. I lived in Tel Aviv in the Six-Day War, and you referred to Mein Kampf, which is a very good illustration, my struggle or my fight. But you're exactly on point and correct. You start in the local elections. In the last presidential election, I think over 6 million Republicans didn't vote. They didn't like Romney. He was a Mormon. We're all Americans. I've traveled all over Europa, and when I was young, I hitchhiked all through the... And I said I was an American. I didn't say I was an African American. I didn't say I was Hispanic. I said I was an American. Mm-hmm. And what's resulting now is we've divided the country. You're an African American. You're Hispanic. We're all Americans. We're Heinz 57. And Christianity, you can't compromise your ideals and your beliefs. They say it's pro-choice. The opposite of pro-life is pro-death. You can't. There's no gray line there. And I agree with you. We are cowards. People are afraid to offend anybody. They want to be politically correct. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I believe in a higher power. I believe in God. And I believe we reap what we sow. But to sit on our duffs and do nothing because we don't want to offend. I know a lot of people in church, they're just too nice. They don't want to offend anybody. You say something, and they get offended, you know, like I'm the outcast. And
that's right. That's right. And we have to stand up. And Jesus actually did as well. Jesus wasn't a soft soap guy who didn't say a bad word about anyone. Just read Matthew chapter 23.
That's
and the
correct.
folks he's going after in Matthew chapter 23 are the religious and political leaders of Israel. Those are the Pharisees. They ran Israel. Rome delegated most of the authority to run Israel, the politics of it, to the Pharisees. And Jesus excoriated them. So there is precedent for Christians to be truthful and direct. We don't have to be unnecessarily unkind. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we have to be truthful and direct, and we have to have some courage. Thanks for the call, Jimmy. Yeah. Keep doing what you're doing out there. And let me go to Tricia, who's in Oklahoma. Tricia, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead.
Hi. You were commenting on why there are that you think Christians should become part of Washington, D.C. I stumbled across a website about 8 months ago, LGBT, mm-hmm. lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. Mm-hmm. They will train you. You contact them. They will train you to work in Washington, D.C., because I thought the same thing. Why do we have so many people in politics that are for this unnatural lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
That could be part of it.
Oh, yeah. The other side is very good politically because that's their only real meaning is life here on Earth quite frequently. They're just thinking, hey, we've got to make this utopia on Earth, so we're going to pour every ounce of effort into politics. And Christians are just too heavenly-minded. We're no earthly good. And we don't seem to make the connection that everything is sacred and that everything we do here has an impact not only here but on eternity. So we can't just look to heaven because what we do here helps people get to heaven. What I mean by that is our ability to preach the gospel is affected by politics. So if we're not involved in politics, then fewer people might get to heaven because of our laziness here on earth. And the other side isn't lazy. We're the lazy ones. We're the cowards where they're the ones getting involved. So that's why I keep saying it's our fault. Look, those people are well within their rights to do what they want to do politically, to get involved politically. We're Americans. We all have the right to try and influence the political process for the values that we support. The problem is we as Christians aren't doing it. And then we complain when things like this happen. Well, it's okay to complain, but it's better to light a candle than just to curse the darkness. And so that's what we need to do. Thank you for your call, Tricia. I appreciate it. This whole program has gone by so quickly because we've had so many calls. The issue again, friends, is Christians getting involved. Christians being people of courage who will occupy till Christ comes. And that's not just for our good, that's for the good of all. If you think about this long enough, the Christian worldview is the only worldview that will secure the rights of everyone. Now, if you'd like more on this, go to our website, crossexamined.org. I'll be in Idaho later this week and the great National Conference on Apologetics in Charlotte at the end of this week as well. Check our website for more, crossexamined.org. See you next week. God bless.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.